everyone. This is Setting History Straight, and this is your host, Linda Watson. Tonight we have with us Marie Williams. She has quite a bit of knowledge on the tribe of Benjamin, so we ask her to come on tonight and help us with this discussion we're going to have on Benjamin. Now, last week we covered Ephraim and Manasseh, and we know that those were the two children of Jacob and Rachel. Now, Rachel's other child was Benjamin. So these tribes would be tied together in history. And now, there was a historian named Julian that wrote how the tribe of Benjamin, or what they call the Danes, were with the Saxons in northern Germany. Now, remember that at one point, the tribes of Israel that were in Scythia split in half, and Rachel's children went to Scandinavia. They settled in Norway, Sweden, and Denmark. If you saw my last program, we covered how the Saxons and the Anglo-Saxons, the Angles and the Saxons, moved from Norway back to northern Germany in the first century. And they brought Benjamin with them. And that's why Julian tells us the story that Benjamin was with them in Germany. Now, many of these people stayed behind in the area of Norway. But Benjamin was the youngest son of Rachel and Jacob, and his only full brother was Joseph. Now, it's interesting that the tribe of Dan was also from Rachel's concubine, and they lived in that area also. So you had all of Rachel's children plus her children by the concubine that lived in the area of Scandinavia. Now, that would also include the tribe of Naphtali, which was Dan's brother. And I just think that's really interesting. This is the area that they basically settled, but they would not stay there in history. They would move.
You actually raised something that goes right along with some of my research. For those in your audience who are familiar with the Old English poem, it's one of the oldest surviving English pieces of literature, Beowulf. I actually love the story of Beowulf. It is a little harrowing, but I really enjoy it. But I mainly enjoy it because of the biblical history and the history of the Israelites that is contained within the poem. What I mean by that is exactly what you just said. And folks, we had not compared notes on this one. Linda, you just brought out that Rachel's children, being Joseph, Benjamin, and Dan by the concubine, Dan was by the concubine, you explained how they settled in the Scandinavian countries.
Yes, also Naphtali.
Well, the story of Beowulf actually takes place in what is now Denmark and Sweden.
But wow, I did not know that.
Yes, but it was written in England. Now, here's the interesting thing. When I first read Beowulf, having the knowledge that I have of who the tribes of Israel were and are, in my reading of Beowulf, Beowulf himself comes from a neighboring tribe to a group of Danes, to a tribe of Danes, to rid them of this evil monster, Grendel. But what you will find is that the Danes who are being literally being brutalized by this monster creature called Grendel, and they cannot kill him. They're trying to kill him. They can't. And a neighboring tribe, which the king of the Danes recognizes as distant family, this neighboring tribe comes in with Beowulf. Beowulf leads them in and says, "I will rid you of this evil monster, Grendel." And I believe, from the research that I have done, and I believe this supports your research, that Beowulf is actually a Benjaminite because of the way
Absolutely.
That he is referenced in the poem, and also his name being Beowulf, W-U-L-F, is simply wolf in the English language. And Beow, they're describing him as the bear wolf, which means, you know, he's got a greatness to him, which is what the story of Beowulf is all about, is this great warrior that comes in and kills this evil monster for a neighboring tribe. But it's fascinating that you just brought that out, because the story of Beowulf actually describes the people as Danes, and then the neighboring distant tribe that comes in to help them, being led by Beowulf, appears to be the tribe of Benjamin. So I find that fascinating.
It's very interesting, because Leah's children stayed in Europe. They were basically in Europe for the most part. And they would all move. But originally, when the Scythians came in, they separated themselves. Jacob's children split in half, and the tribes of Rachel and her concubine, which was Dan, moved in to the Scandinavian countries, because they separated themselves from their brother. And they would eventually, as we mentioned in the last program, they would eventually move themselves into northern Germany, and that area was called Chaswe, and today they call it Saxony. And it was the old Saxony country of Germany. And eventually they would migrate down into England and into the area of Normandy that we know is where the Normans settled. But it's very interesting study to see how these people through the centuries have been identified. And we kept this book, Beowulf, and we teach it in English literature in high school, but we don't understand who it is.
Exactly right. And you will find, though, Linda, that they are removing pieces of literature like this from the public schools today.
Because you can still, they figured out what it is.
But for the commoner, they don't want the commoner to know who he or she really is and who they're truly descended from.
Now, the word Benjamin means son of my right hand. He was the brother, as we mentioned, of Joseph's. And throughout history, they were closely connected also with the tribe of Judah. Now, I'm just going to read you something from the Bible dictionary called the Pelebit. It says, Benjamin was the only tribe that seemed to have pursued archery for any purpose and their skills in the bow. Now, you can find this in 1 Samuel 20, verse 20 and 36, and 2 Samuel 1, verse 22. Now, there's a reference in Scripture that tells us some of the people who used the bow were left-handed. That's very interesting. Now, their ancient inheritance lay between Ephraim, Judah, and Dan on the Jordan River. Now, after the dispersion, many of the people from the tribe of Benjamin did travel north with the other 10 tribes. But we know that most of the tribe of Benjamin would stay with the tribe of Judah in the southern kingdom. Now, let's pick up and talk about Judges 20. And that's really an important story about Benjamin. This is the story about the concubine who was raped and killed by a group of homosexuals in the land of Benjamin. And really, Benjamin refused to turn over the perpetrators to be punished. Marie, do you want to make any comments about Judges 20?
I am going to comment a little bit. I go very deeply. I go to the second and third layer in Scripture. Take that to a level and ask the question, why did the whole tribe of Benjamin go to war with the rest of Israel? And that's exactly what they did. You had one single tribe going to war with all the other tribes of Israel.
Exactly.
Why did they do that? Why did they do that over some worthless Benjaminites, which the Bible calls them worthless?
Right.
And notice it was a Levite priest. So you've got some religious teaching going on here. These two, what they did was they went into the Levite's church in type. So what these men did is they berated her. They continually harassed her verbally throughout the night and said, well, why do you believe this way? Because I'm going to show you research and proof that it's this way, but yet you continue to ignore that. You won't even look at it, and you are going to continue to walk in a way that I am trying to explain to you is false. And so therefore they killed the woman spiritually. You went in, you abused this congregation of people. They're not where you are. You never should have brought this information out to her. She's not ready for it. She's still on milk. She's not on meat, because Benjamin, being a wolf, eats meat. His father, Jacob, renamed Israel, even described him prophetically as being a ravening wolf, a wolf that is hungry, can never get enough to eat. He's
that
always
is very
searching.
Interesting.
Always searching, always eating. And then they also want to take that knowledge and that information to their brothers in Israel. So therefore, you take this symbolism of her dying and then the Levite priest cutting her body up and sending it out to Israel and saying, look what they've done to her. And so Israel comes in and says, tribe of Benjamin, how can this be? Well, Benjamin, the tribe of Benjamin says, no, I'm going to defend these men. Yes, what they did, they shouldn't have done. And we are going to stand up for what we believe is correct. I want to stop right there because I know you have some things to add.
Well, that's an interesting take, because there's always a spiritual level to anything that you read. One of the things that I want to bring out with this story is the strength of Benjamin. Now, they were mighty warriors. The tribes together all had outnumbered Benjamin. I think it was like 400,000 to 26,000 of Benjamin. So there was like 400,000 Israelites and only 26,000 of the tribe of Benjamin. And basically what happened was that Benjamin won the first two battles against their brother. They had to physically go back and fast and ask God for the ability to defeat their brother, because he had won the first two battles. That shows you right there the strength of these people. They were unbelievable.
Yeah, the 11 other tribes had to go to God and fast and seek his intervention. And I believe this is a trait of the tribe of Benjamin, by the way. Benjamin already believed he was standing in the right place, else he would not have taken his whole tribe and gone to war against 400,000 against the 26,000, right?
Exactly.
So then he gets a little cocky. I've seen that if you read all through scripture and you look at Benjamin, especially with the story of King Saul, you'll see that even Saul got a little big for his britches. Remember, in the beginning, he was very
absolutely
humble.
Right.
So I believe at that point, because the rest of Israel humbled themselves before God and sought his intervention, then I believe that God said, mm-hmm, yes, because this is his family and he's not going to get haughty. I can't let him get haughty. He's got to learn a lesson from this.
I think it's interesting that someone was chosen as the first king of Israel from the tribe of Benjamin, because we knew that from the beginning that the tribe of Judah would have the scepter and they would be the ones that would rule. So it's strange to me in a way that God chose Saul to be the very first king, because he was from the tribe of Benjamin. I just think that's interesting.
But you remember, God chose him because he was a humble man in the beginning.
Go right ahead.
Oh, Psalm 68 plays this out, in my opinion. Psalm 68 and verse 27. Well, actually, I guess we could start in verse 24. This is a psalm that talks about when the kingdom is reestablished, okay? That's part of this psalm, okay, talking about the kingdom and the temple. And in verse 24, they have seen thy procession, O God, the procession of my God, my King, into the sanctuary. The singers went on, the musicians after them, in the midst of the maidens beating tambourines. Bless God in the congregations, even the Lord, you who are of the fountain of Israel. And here's the key verse in 27. There is Benjamin, the youngest, ruling them. The princes of Judah in their throng, the princes of Zebulun, the princes of Naphtali. So when I see this clue in Psalm 68 that tells us that Benjamin, the smallest and youngest, is leading or ruling the princes of Judah, the princes of Zebulun, and the princes of Naphtali, what that tells me is, it takes me back to a good example for your audience, is the relationship between Jonathan and David. David was to be king, but Jonathan was there at his right hand always. They were very close. And throughout Scripture, I believe that we see that while Judah will wear the crown and Judah will reign, that Benjamin will actually be sitting at his right hand as a counselor, so to speak.
So that ties back to his definition of his name, son of my right hand.
It certainly does. Son of the right hand, meaning sitting at the right hand of the seat of government, not exactly wearing the crown, but sitting there at the right hand. And then also, that son of the right hand, if you do research on right and left, well, right indicates the south, which you've already pointed out that Benjamin dwelt with Judah in the south. Right. A good portion of them, and the book of Kings tells us when God separated Israel into two houses, the northern 10 tribes, he left Benjamin with Judah in the south, forming the two southern tribes.
Exactly. And
he said he would do that to leave a lamp unto Judah. And I believe, Linda, that's 1 Kings 11 and verse 36, I believe. This is when God is separating Israel into the northern and southern kingdoms. And he says, starting in verse 34, "Nevertheless, I will not take the whole kingdom out of his hand." He says, "But I will make him ruler all the days of his life for the sake of my servant David." He's speaking of Judah. "Nevertheless, I will not take the whole kingdom out of his hand, but I will make him ruler all the days of his life for the sake of my servant David, whom I chose, who observed my commandments and my statutes. But I will take the kingdom from his son's hand and give it to you, even 10 tribes. But to his son, I will give one tribe, that my servant David may have a lamp always before me in Jerusalem, the city where I have chosen for myself to put my name."
Absolutely.
And that one tribe that he gives the tribe of Judah is Benjamin.
Great.
He calls him a lamp. Also, another way that we can look at Benjamin as the son of the right hand or son of the south is where I was actually going with this, because Benjamin being attached to the tribe of Judah, we know that God left Judah in the southern portion as the southern king and Ephraim in the north as the northern king. What we find with Benjamin being son of the right hand, he is also called son of the south. And that's very interesting for us today, particularly in the United States of America. And there has been a movement to destroy the symbolism of the Confederate flag. And we know that there were things done under the Confederate flag that no one would ever approve of. I make the case that the Union Jack, the cross that is on the Confederate flag with the 13 stars on it, that cross symbolizes the crossing of Jacob Israel's arms in Genesis 48 when he blessed Joseph's two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. That would be the same symbol that would be made if you were to take your arms and cross them to lay your right hand on the youngest son and your left hand on the eldest son, just
That's
as Jacob
exactly
Israel
right.
did.
That's true.
So that right there is the symbol on the Confederate flag with the 13 stars. And remember, because Joseph became two tribes, Ephraim and Manasseh, then Israel became 13 tribes rather than 12. You know, you can say
exactly.
Israel is 12 tribes as well as 13, and that's why.
I just want to make a comment here. The reason there's 13 tribes is because Joseph got a double portion.
Yes,
that's,
I totally agree
reason.
With that. Yes, and it played out in his two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, whom they received this special blessing from Jacob Israel himself. Well,
exactly.
Benjamin, I believe, being a witness to that, because Benjamin was very close to his father. Remember, his mother died, and He had the knowledge of that symbolism. And the enemy, the adversary, is trying to get rid of that symbolism because, as you know, Linda, anything that attaches the United States of America to ancient Israel, they do not want our people to know, because then our people would know who they are. They may turn and repent, and then the adversary would not have a hand over them at all.
Well, you know, that's why this teaching in this country about the 13, the number 13, being an unlucky number. Ephraim is our lead tribe in this nation. And that's why there's 13 stars, there's 13 stripes, there's 13 red stripes, there's 13 white stripes. It all leads back to the number 13, which is a very important number for this nation, because everything pops up 13, 13 colonies. But our enemy has tried to make that into an unlucky number. But that cross that you're talking about is also on many of the other flags that are Israelite flags.
That's right. The British flag, the Union Jack, it even tells you what it is. They call it the Union Jack. Well, Jack is simply a derivative of Jacob. And so it is the Union of Jacob. That symbolism is the crossing of his arms. It was a prophetic blessing in Genesis 48. But he told that Ephraim and Manasseh would become great nations, and one would actually be a multitude of nations in one hand, which I make the case is the United States of America being 50 nations in one hand, or one federal government. If you do a word study out on that in Genesis 48, you'll see that plainly.
Well, you know, also it was Ephraim that would always move west. So it was told from the beginning that it would move north first into Scythia, then it would move west. It moved west into Europe, west into Britain, and eventually west into America. So what we're teaching here is all 12 tribes are basically in America, but they're in other countries too. It's an important connection to notice that how the tribe of Judah, which we will teach in another program, the tribe of Judah is closely aligned with the people that were the Scotch-Irish people, because we know that the people who were the Milesians that went into Ireland, and this is recorded in the history of Ireland by Keating, that the Milesian people were from the land of Israel. They were of the tribe of Judah. They were in the land of Israel. They traveled up and settled in Spain first, and they went into the land of Ireland. Those were the Milesian people. Those are the people they call the Gaels today. They traveled into Scotland, and eventually we know that the Scotch-Irish people, many of them came and settled in the south. This is what Maria is alluding to when she says that Judah is in the south, because when we get to the history of America and the founding of America, we're going to talk about these 12 tribes, and we're going to show you where they went. And Maria's commenting that she thinks that Benjamin stayed with the tribe of Judah in the south, which would make perfect sense. Now, I will prove this to you when I get to the story of Judah. We will go back through this history again so all of you can see it. But the interesting part about Ezekiel 37 is that the two tribes come together and join with one stick. I think that stick was the Civil War that pulled these two tribes and made them one union.
I agree. That my research shows that as well.
Now we want to take a little break and go to a commercial.
You're listening to Setting History Straight with Linda Watson.
let's go ahead and give a brief history of these people we call the Vikings in history. Now, the Vikings were known for their ability as mighty warriors. In around the 700s and the 800s, Charlemagne came to power in France. At that time, it was called Gaul, and Charlemagne was the king of the Franks. Now, if you go back and look at the heritage for the Franks, it says they would always have power. They would be a tribe with power and dignity. And you see that France plays a major role in Europe as a leader. Now, God used the Franks, and Charlemagne particularly, to go in and squash the Lombards, who were the tribe of Simeon. Now, I've covered that in another program, but the tribe of Simeon were the Lombards. They were in northern Italy, and they were continually at civil war with their brother, who was in the southern part of Italy. Now, Charlemagne came down and basically took over the land of northern Italy and made it Frankish rule. Now, the important thing is that the Vikings who were living in the Scandinavian area, Norway, Sweden, and Denmark, were watching what was going on. And they saw Charlemagne and how he destroyed their brother. And they were not going to allow it to happen to them. Charlemagne went out first and tried to make a truce with the kings in the Scandinavian countries in Norway. And Charlemagne reneged on that agreement and went in and killed 3,000 of the Saxons that were in the area of Scandinavia. And he went and burnt down their sacred tree. He destroyed and chopped down their sacred tree. Now, I will tell you, each one of these tribes understood that they were to carry and make a monument. Wherever they went, they made a monument to God. And this sacred tree, which was called the Imrishul, I can spell it for you, Imrishul, that sacred tree was their monument that they had in their country that showed who they were. And when Charlemagne came in and chopped that tree down, that's when the Vikings began their raids, and they began to push against mainly France, the coast of France, which was where Charlemagne was. And they also went into the monasteries. Now, I think that's interesting because Charlemagne had ties to the Roman Catholic Church at that point, and they attacked the monasteries up and down the coast of in England and in Europe. And the Vikings had a sword that no one else would have for another 800 years. There's a video on some of the history channels on that sword. They can't actually reproduce it today. They do not know how the Vikings made this sword. But they began to push their way into England, and they settled into England. They pushed their way into Europe, and eventually the French said, hey, we're just going to give you a part of Europe. So they gave them the area that they call Normandy today. And that is in the northern part of France. They gave them and carved out that section for them. And they said that they went into England and they just adopted the Celtic Church. They didn't have any trouble with the Celtic Church. So why would that be the case? Because they already had been taught about keeping God's laws. So these people were not what we think they are as pagans and heathens, which we are told so much of the time.
Exactly. Right. And my research shows that as well. And also, too, Linda, going back to the story of Beowulf, that's what Beowulf plays out as well, that because they call them Celts, but they were very devoted to the Most High God.
Right. That when the other tribes fell to the Roman Catholic Church, we had Scotland fall around the 11th century, and we in the 12th century, we had Ireland fall. But it was the tribes in Norway, in the area of Norway, that never gave in to the Catholic Church until the 1450. They were still under the esmus of the Celtic Church and the teachings of the Celtic Church. The Celtic Church was highly opposed to the Roman Catholic faith. So I think that's real interesting. They held out to the 15th century.
I think that goes back to the story of Judges 20, where if we take it to that spiritual level and it's actually two religious entities, I think that's what we see ultimately played out in Judges 20 and 21.
I think you're absolutely right. Now, if you remember the story about how Joseph and his children returned to the land of Cana, and on their way home, they met his brother Esau, and there's a prophetic symbolism there. All of the sons of Joseph bowed down to Esau, and Esau would become the Roman Empire. But Benjamin was not born at that time, so he never bowed down to Esau. So this is significant because Rome never ruled the area of the Scandinavian countries where Benjamin was. Now, I just want to mention, just to read a few historical facts about the Normans, because the Normans, again, were the people that came out of Denmark, came out of Scandinavian countries as the Vikings and settled in that area of northern France. These people were a mixture of Swedes. They had the tribe of Dan with them, but they were primarily the tribe of Benjamin. You can reference this information by going to John Davies' book called The Tribes. On page 232, he gives a great explanation about how Benjamin settled in the area of Normandy and were the Normans. Now, we also have another person who lived during the 9th century. His name was Duda. He was a Norman, and he said that the Normans came from the Danes' descendants. They were the ancient Greeks, the Dantes, which would have made them connected to the tribe of Dan, and their forefathers were the Sacs, D-A-C-A-E. And so you have this connection, and that another name for those people were the Getas. And the Getas are mentioned, I know, in Beowulf, are they not?
Yes, they are.
These people called the Dasaks were the people who were of the tribe of Benjamin, and they came out of Scythia. All of these historians are tying this back. Now, let's just talk a second about the symbol, which is the wolf. There's a wolf on the coat of arms for Norway. And I have it out on my website if you want to go see it, 12 Tribe History. Now, my question is, why would they have a wolf? Because each one of these tribes were given a symbol. Benjamin's symbol was the wolf, and they kept this symbol with them all their lives.
I've got some additional support for what you just brought out, that Benjamin is the Normans, and that is in my name, Williams. My name, Williams, comes from the Norse. It's an old Norman name. Okay, well, when I did further research on this surname, I found that Williams goes back to an old Hebrew name, which literally means wolf.
Wow. So you're tied really directly back to this.
Well, it appears so. I'm still doing the research, but by name, certainly.
Well, you know, each family has their family coat of arms. You might want to go out and look at coat of arms for Williams and see what pops up. But, you know, you see this wolf on many of the symbols. The Normans use the wolf as their symbol. As the Vikings, the leader, Rollo, had a wolf on his helmet.
And you see many others, but Godfrey de Bonham had a wolf on his helmet also. He was one of the Benjaminites. He went to war in Jerusalem. So you see that the wolf has been a part of the history of Benjamin and the Danes throughout history. And it's interesting that William the Conqueror was another one who wore the symbol of the wolf.
And William would support that.
Absolutely. And William the Conqueror, of course, you know the history of William the Conqueror. He would actually go into England and become the King of England. And before that, when the Vikings raids were at their height, it was Alfred the Great who would stop them. And I think that's interesting because none of you have done history study on Alfred the Great. Please go do that. Because Alfred the Great was the only English king who took the laws of the Bible and made them part of the English law. He actually took the statutes, wrote them in the order that they were given in the Bible, and put them in English law. And he was called Alfred the Great. And so when the Vikings started pushing their way into Britain, they were stopped by Alfred the Great.
He actually divided the people up into captains of thousands, hundreds, and tens. And the captain of thousands was called a sheriff. That's where we get the word sheriff. and he was from the tribe of Judah, by the way. He's the only one that was ever given the title of great. The people loved him. He had all kinds of health problems. I think he had epilepsy. It's absolutely amazing. We have not been told these things.
It certainly is. The wolf itself, if you do a study on the characteristics of a wolf in nature, and you know our founders in this country described our God as the God of nature, and so we look to nature to explain things to us as well, and it's important to look at the characteristics of a wolf if you want to learn more about the tribe of Benjamin and their personality traits. Just like if you were doing a study on Judah, you would want to look at the traits of a lion. And the other thing, which I find kind of amusing, Linda, is that when God placed the tribe of Benjamin with Judah, he was basically putting cats and dogs together. But I mean, that's the funny side of it. But honestly, I believe the reason that he did indeed place Benjamin with Judah is because if you remember back in Genesis, when sons of Israel were going into Egypt, mm-hmm. and they didn't recognize Joseph, well, if you remember, they had to go back and plead with their father to allow Benjamin to go with them. And when they did that, Israel did not want to allow Benjamin to go. And Judah gave his life. He pledged his life for the life of Benjamin. And so therefore, you had Judah standing there, and he was willing to give up his life for his little brother if he did not bring him safely back to his father.
And you know, the other piece of that is that Benjamin did the same thing for the tribe of Judah. Do you know that the Oslo Accord was done in Norway? This was an attempt at a peace accord for the land of Israel, and it was done in Norway. Why? Because Norway has always been interested in protecting their brother Judah, and vice versa. You see these things, and we don't know why they happen. And because we don't know our origin and we've lost that information, we need to connect to that because it proves the Bible is accurate.
Exactly right. And you're doing a great work by going through each of these tribes and bringing out their history and where they've been and where they are today. And if our people could only latch on to this, wake up and continue on with the research that you've already started for them and understand who they are, I mean, just miracles would happen.
Especially one right after another. Nation could connect to their roots, which we would love to see, they would understand that they need to return back to the covenant of Abraham.
That's correct.
That's the whole reason why we do this.
The powers that be, though, if the European American tries to go back further in his ancestry than simply Europe or anything beyond recent European history, then you're called a racist.
Exactly.
And that's the way they try to shut the common man down from doing the research on who he truly is.
Exactly. Well, there's one other piece that we want to mention, and that is, where did the tribe of Benjamin go? And I know you want to make some comments on that. But the first thing that I want to mention that most people do not know is that the czars of Russia were Benjaminites. They were from the tribe of Benjamin. We have that information that around the 800s, the people from Russia came to Norway and said, so much confusion going on in our country. We need for you to come reign over us. When you look at the pictures of these people who reigned as the czars of Russia, they look like Anglo-Saxon people. And the reason for that is that they were of the tribe of Benjamin. And there was three kings that went into Russia. They just took control of Russia and stopped the crime and stopped the violence that was going on in that land. They went in and established order in that land. Now, that is well established in history. Now, I want to read you this account, and I'm going to read from a book called The Vikings. It's written by Else Rosdale. Now it says, in 862, the Slavics, exhausted by intertribal wars, made the following proposal to the Rus. It says, our country is rich and immense, but it is rent by disorder. Come and govern and reign over us. Going on, the three Swedish Vikings responded and came to Russia. Ruska became the governor of Novgorod. Sinias settled down in Boguslavia, and Tuvan in Izhbor. Now, 2 years later, Sinias and Pruvor both died, and Ruska extended his rule over the whole country. Later, two of his lieutenants went down to Kiev, nearly 600 miles away, and established it. In 882, Oleg, Ruska's successor, came to Kiev in his turn. Having established his leadership over various towns and tribes, Oleg stretched considerably the new Russian state and became its master. The new capital, Kiev, little by little became one of the richest towns in Europe, and Ruska's successors began a ruling dynasty in Russia for more than 700 years. Now, there's your proof that these czars did not. Now, they reigned up until 1917, until the Russian Revolution. That's how long they reigned in history, and they established order in Russia. Now, some of the tribes of Benjamin went into Russia, and I want to prove that. Now, I'm just going to read you what the National Geographic magazine had in it. It says, by the 9th century, the Vikings navigated up the Vulgate and the Dnieper River to reach the merchants of the Caliphate, Abbasidid. And by 860, they had attacked Constantinople. Now, we also know by 1221 that Genghis Khan and his descendants devastated Russia for 200 years. When attacking, they often used women and children as their shields. But by 1300 AD, they had taken over China, Tibet, and Mongolia up to the Black Sea. Now, this is interesting. They were stopped by the Vikings and the descendants of Benjamin. It was the tribe of Benjamin that would cause the fall of Genghis Khan's army. Now, isn't that interesting? Now, you see how powerful these people, the Israelites, were, that they took down the Roman Empire and they also stopped Genghis Khan. That is absolutely unbelievable. Now, the Encyclopedia Britannica says something else. It says the word Russia is linked to the word Rush, R-U-S-H, a name given to Viking Norman in the 10th century who migrated from the Scandinavian region into the Kiev, K-I-E-V. The name Russia has the Scandinavian Viking origin, not Slavic, has a Viking origin, not a Slavic one. Even though modern Russia is overwhelmingly Slavic. Well, the Slavic people went into Russia. They're not the only tribe, but we'll cover that at another point. Now, Slavic people are definitely made a huge impact in Russia. The Viking name Rosh is well established as a Benjaminite origin, as one of the sons and clans of Benjamin was called Rosh, R-O-S-H. Now, you can find the word R-O-S-H in Genesis 46, verse 21. Now, the quote that I just read you was in the Encyclopedia Britannica, 1943 edition, volume 19, See Russia, and the subheading is The Origin of Rush on page 712. There is a connection to those czars in Russia with the tribe of Benjamin. The name Russia comes from the name Rush, which the encyclopedia is telling you comes from the name Rush, which is from the Vikings and not a Slavic name. Now, isn't that interesting?
It's fascinating. And while you were explaining that, I had to go to Genesis 46 and verse 21 and look at Rush. And the name literally means head. It means head, top, summit, chief, height, and a chief, head, a family priest, and the fact that you said that they came in, they were asked by those in the area of Russia, they went to the Vikings, which were i.e. Benjaminites, and asked them to come in and take control of the country. I find that fascinating.
We want to talk about
something that's in Scripture. We're still talking about the locations of these people. This is what Moses was saying about Benjamin in Deuteronomy 33, verse 12. Let's just read that verse again. Would you mind reading that verse for me, Maria, and give us an explanation of what that means?
Deuteronomy 33. It says in Deuteronomy 33 and verse 12, of Benjamin he said, may the beloved of the Lord dwell in security by him, who shields him all the day, and he dwells between his shoulders. Mm-hmm. And that word shoulders, by the way, if you do a word study on it, it means heart or intent. So Benjamin would dwell between, on the spiritual level now, okay? Physically, you could look at it as dwelling between his shoulders, but spiritually, Benjamin dwells between his heart or his intent.
Exactly. We mentioned how he was in the area of Normandy. We mentioned how Benjamin was in the area of Norway and in the area of Denmark, and he also lived in the area of Iceland.
Well, Iceland is, if you look at dwelling between the shoulders, and if you look at Great Britain, and also you have the throne of Judah sitting in Great Britain, as well as the Jacob's Pillar Stone, which is the stone that the kings and queens of Ireland, Scotland, and England have been crowned on since it was taken there by Jeremiah the prophet.
Absolutely.
And those with him. So you have the throne there in Great Britain with Judah sitting there, but each tribe itself has an independent nation. For instance, we're talking about Benjamin. It seems very clear that Iceland was given to the tribe of Benjamin as their, quote, homeland, as well as I know that France has been tied to Reuben.
How does all these scriptures fall like this? I mean, I asked you, even if you was to be a skeptic on this information, that you can actually see these people, that they sit on the shoulders of Judah and sit on the shoulders of Ephraim. I mean, how do you see these things and not make a connection to the Bible? I'm going to be teaching about all the 12 tribes, and when I finish with that, I'm going to teach about the history of Esau, and we're going to go into the different other origins of different countries and show you proof as to who they are, because our purpose in this program is to prove the validity of the Bible and that the things that God has said have come true. And we have lost much of our history, and we've lost the knowledge to know that our people are of the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so we don't know our origin. We don't know that God expects something of us. And you have a job to do. You know, I want to basically end our discussion about Benjamin. But before I do, Maria, I want to ask if you have any last words.
I mean, there is so much more that we could go into on Benjamin, but time restraints don't allow that. But I appreciate the opportunity. And if you don't mind, I'd like to offer my email address for those who may be interested in corresponding about the tribe of Benjamin.
Absolutely. Go right ahead.
That is BenjaminHowling@AOL.com. And I would invite those of you who are interested, maybe share some research that you've done. I'm always looking for more knowledge, more information, and I would greatly appreciate that.
Well, I am so delighted that you came on with us and you've added so much to the story of Benjamin. And so we're going to go ahead and close now, and we're going to say blessings to all and good night.
Good night, Linda. Good night.